We'd like to take a moment to talk about Jane, one of our sponsors who helped make this episode possible. Jane is a practice management software built for every kind of mental health practitioner and is thoughtfully designed with your clients in mind. Jane makes it convenient to meet with individuals, couples, or families, whether that's online, via Jane's telehealth options, or in person.
From day one, you can expect unlimited customer support through onboarding that sets you up for success and a 99.99% software reliability that ensures that Jane is always ready to start the day with you.
Just as you are always learning and improving, Jane is too. The team at Jane values customer feedback and uses it to design even more helpful features. So you can think of Jane as a software that grows with you.
If you're curious to see Jane in action, head to jane.app/mentalhealth/US to book a free one-on-one demo. You can also mention the code DCPOD at sign up for a 2-month free grace period on your new Jane account. Hey everyone, you are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening. Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 2 of our Autistic Burnout collection that we are doing. I'm sure we will find a name for it at some point. And today we are working on burnout recovery plans. And I think last episode, the intro to this series was heavy, as it always is. So we want to give you some tangible advice.
Why do people listen to us?
Because we always go down this rabbit hole. It's like the relatability. The heaviness is the real stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it helps people probably feel less alone in it.
Yeah. Anyway, take us away.
So autistic burnout recovery. Do I just info dump? How do we stage this, Patrick?
So I know you are working on an autistic burnout like course in a series right now in neurodivergent insights, and that's kind of what we talked about prompting us to kind of follow this path. And I think so often, right, people are asking about anything really that we talk about, but burnout exclusively, like, what do I do?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do I come out of this?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so funny because like I talk about it all the time, and that's probably one of the biggest questions I get when I'm speaking. And I like also hate the question because any answer is going to feel slightly minimizing I like to contextualize the conversation as ideally this would be a systems issue in the sense of like kind of what we tapped into last week around we don't live in a society that supports humans well, and especially autistic humans, especially parents. So ideally this would be an issue that's has some system involvement, but the systems are largely letting us down. So then the question gets punted to like, well, what can I do? And how I wish there was like a magical 3-step cure your burnout in 5 weeks, but that would, you know, make me a scam artist. So, so I do focus on like what's within our individual control, just because I think we tend to have more agency when that is where we focus, not in a way of dismissing or not naming the systemic pieces that are outside of our control. I think that's really important, but I also think a lot about what cultivates a sense of agency versus helplessness. So I think through what is in our control that we have some agency over. Yep. Privilege is also going to influence how much is in our control and what we have influence over. For example, how much demands you can drop. That's very interconnected to privilege. So I think that's just my huge nuance of saying this conversation deserves more systemic thinking than it often gets. And this is our like imperfect response to that.
I like that. That's very well said. Also,
okay.
I think
go ahead.
In our city, our burnout city, the people who would be like walking up and down the streets would be like mainline marketers trying to sell you like cure your burnout in 5 weeks type of thing.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And it'd be like infomercials and you'd be trying to decide while you're cognitively fatigued, which one to buy, but you can't, and they're all talking at you. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, carry on.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, so when I think about burnout recovery, I kind of think about two different layers, or a few different layers, but two that stand out. One is like a very pragmatic layer, and it's around practical supports and strategies that we can implement to support us. So this would be things like sensory supports that we can implement, things like sleep supports, nervous system supports, energy pacing systems. So it's like, it's got a more knowledge base. It's more like, what's the tools in your toolkit type thing. Then there's a second layer, and I would say, well, both are important, but the second layer I think is really important. And if we're just like, okay, I'm going to implement a pacing system, or I'm going to do, you know, get some nervous system supports, that's not going to be enough. The second layer is really where I think a lot of the work is, the psychological work, the depth work. And that is what I call like knowledge and depth work. So that's things like addressing grief around our limits, addressing internalized ableism. Because until we address our internalized ableism, we're going to keep pushing ourselves to capacity. Like you and I were saying last episode of, I will push until my body tells me I can't. There's a reason that type A personality connects with chronic fatigue syndrome. It's because we're the personalities that are like, push, push, push until the body collapses.
For sure.
It's also a lot of, I guess, like insight or knowledge. So that would be things like understanding our energy rhythms and then learning how to work with them. So understanding, you know, our signals, understanding our sensory profile, understanding our nervous system. So there's also that layer of coming to know self. So those are kind of, when I think about recovery, I think about those two different buckets that we dip into. One's very pragmatic and tools, and the other is kind of depth work and self-knowledge.
Right. Yep. That makes so much sense to me. So I know I like taking that really pragmatic approach too, and just being able to like zoom out a little bit and look at the, like you said, two different buckets, so to speak, because this is such a complex experience that would be so hard to like deep dive every single component right now in that way. So where do you want to start? Which bucket?
We could start with the pragmatic. I think it might be a more like interesting conversation to explore the second bucket personally between you and me. Mm-hmm. That would be, I think, more of our typical style, more of an alive conversation.
Sure.
But the pragmatic stuff might be kind of helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do that first, and then we'll kind of switch gears.
Okay. Literally pulling up my workbook to like anchor. Like, what did I say? What were the things? The pragmatic stuff. And this is a metaphor. So within the pragmatic stuff, the metaphor I use, metaphor within metaphor. And this is not unique. This is like a common metaphor used in stress, but the idea of a faucet and a bucket. So when we have a bucket and the faucet's coming on really, like, let's say the faucet is coming out really fast. It doesn't really matter how big the bucket is. Like, it's just going to fill up quickly and going to overflow. And if we have a really small bucket, and even if the faucet's just kind of dribbling down, it's going to fill up pretty quickly. So there's kind of these two aspects of stress or burnout. There is the faucet, which is the things coming in, the incoming stressors, the incoming demands. And then there's the bucket, and that's basically your nervous system or your body's capacity. How much capacity do you have to take in? And so, and we know that burnout, this is, comes from Raymaker's, you know, concept of burnout. It's when life demands exceed our capacity, and our accommodations are part of our capacity, then we're in burnout. So I kind of think, and this just helps my brain because I need to break things down. I think about it as like, what are the things that I can do to reduce the faucet, so that incoming demands. So that would be things like intentionally dropping demands, maybe outsourcing things, maybe simplifying our routine, maybe sorting out like what are the things that we can release around our expectations of self or family. You know, if we're used to like family, making family dinners, for example, is that something that we can modify during burnout? Things like practicing good boundaries is something that would reduce the faucet. And then again, that's going to tie back into depth work because we often have to work through some people pleasing, which might be rooted in internalized ableism before we can practice good boundaries. So there'll be some kind of back and forth between these of like, we might have a boundary script, but if it's hard to use it, that would be a signal there's more depth work to do.
Right.
Things like actually getting formal accommodations and supports, that reduces the faucet, because if we're navigating traditional work systems or school systems and we're having executive functioning challenges, that's more demands that we have, if those, especially if those aren't accommodated. Things like using sensory supports so that we're taking in less sensory demands in our environment. Using strategic withdrawal, which I appreciated you mentioned that on the last episode, how withdrawal can sometimes be kind of a depressive withdrawal, but sometimes it can be that strategic withdrawal of just like, yeah, I just need a withdrawal here.
Yeah, that's my go-to most of the time.
Withdraw?
Whenever I notice like anything I can reduce significantly, or if there's something I can incorporate, I'm like, if I just withdraw, I know that some of the dominoes start to fall a little bit.
Yeah, because there's so much that's happening for you when you withdraw. Like the social demands are less, which because of how hypervigilant you are, I imagine your like prefrontal cortex gets a break. Your rumination gets a break because of attachment stuff you've talked about in the past. Mm-hmm. Your sensory system gets a break. Your physical energy gets a break because you're like, I think a lot of times you're like laying down watching a show, right? Yeah. Like you're restoring on all kind of cylinders when you withdraw.
And I need it to be like very dark and very cold. Mm-hmm. Those things have to happen as well.
Wait, why cold? That's interesting.
Just because I'm hot all the time. So like I would prefer to be cold over hot, and then I'm feeling more comfortable in my body. So go ahead.
Well, I'm laughing because so we've talked about perhaps doing a writing retreat together this fall, and we would hate coexisting. Like if we did an Airbnb, we'd hate coexisting together because I always run cold.
Yep.
So I always need heat.
That's kind of what I was thinking too when I mentioned you. I was like, I'll just find something nearby because like I need the fan on at all times. If there's an air conditioner, I need the air conditioning on at all times. Like it is 70 degrees in our house right now and I'm upstairs, but I can feel that I'm too hot despite having the fan on. So I really, really would prefer it to be like 67-ish at the moment. And that would be really ideal. Yeah.
I'm gonna like a good 68, 69. 70 would be a little bit too hot for me too, actually. Mm-hmm. Especially if I'm recording.
Yeah. I didn't notice it until I like went downstairs, got a drink, ate a snack, came back up, and I was like, damn, I'm like really warm now. But so social withdrawal for sure. That's one of the things that I feel like I have control over. And probably one of my go-to mechanisms, but it's also a good indication. Right. Because that's kind of what you're mentioning too, is like the awareness of when we're doing some of these things is important at times too, to like, when I start to notice that I'm falling into more of the withdrawal process, I know that I am burnt out.
Yeah. And that's a great one of those, like, that's a very external thing that you can track. So even if you're slower to track like fatigue or other internal things, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm hitting burnout.
Yeah.
And this is one where I find it's helpful for folks when they can have a few scripts around it, because especially if the person is not also depressed, or if the motivation's coming from that strategic withdrawal, it can be common for the people in our lives to worry about us when we withdraw. And then that's a demand to like reassure people of like, no, I'm okay. So having a script around like, I'm in a low capacity season and I'm intentionally withdrawing for a few days to like replenish. I'm okay. You don't need to worry about me. like having a really simple script so that then we're not managing people's emotions about our withdrawal.
Yeah. Yeah. The guilt or the shame about that, or just the energy that has to go into reassuring some people as well.
Yeah. Cause yeah, most society sees withdrawal as a bad thing.
Yeah. 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 I'm actually thinking of a friend who keeps DMing me, and they're doing it out of like best interest, I think, but like, I can't offer much right now in terms of response. And they keep like trying to change the approach and how they're asking how I'm doing. And I'm just like, but I'm going to go use what you just said as soon as I get out of here. And I am going to DM them that.
Mm-hmm. And like, that's a great, where like you could literally on your notes app have like a few scripts like that. And then it's copy and paste. So you're not even having to like reword it every time.
Right.
Yeah. That would be enough for our merch. Our merch store that doesn't exist, that would be another like we could have little like, I don't know, like stickers, like burnout slogan stickers, or things that communicate like boundaries and strategic withdrawal when they're in burnout.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I also notice I'm noticing it more and more, and we were talking about like chronic health last, or chronic pain last episode. I notice that my throat and my voice starts to get more of that vocal fry / tension as I move more into burnout. And I think there's just seemingly like less energy and capacity to regain it. And maybe it's stress related and tension related too, but it almost feels like everything starts to close up and constrict.
That would make sense. And does it take, and I know you've done, I think, a little bit of speech therapy since your surgery. Does it take like conscious effort and energy? Oh, Patrick.
Big time. Yeah.
Just to like make your voice. Yeah.
I can feel it right now compared to like the other episode that we did.
Yeah, I can hear it. Yeah. That would be like on top of like great prefrontal cortex, like masking what words to say, but then to also be like using some energy to think about how to like move your throat when you're talking. Oh, Patrick. No wonder you're depressed all the time.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm really glad you laughed at that. I was like, I popped in my head. I was like, do I do that?
It all adds up. It all adds up. So. But so having those scripts readily available, super important in, like you said, having them in a notes app, having them accessible so that you can just copy and paste. So you don't have to think about what you need to say or type out to someone or how to respond to something. You just have your go-to set of responses and you just allow, you know, yourself to use those and practicing that self-compassion with this stuff too, when you are defaulting to, I need to go more into, you know, communicating this way.
Yeah. Yeah. I love a good script because I am not good in the moment with words, especially social words. It's happening right now. And I will often feel like I need to give way more context and over explain. And then that's exhausting. So I love a good boundary script. We actually have I'll link this in the show notes, but in the Nook, we've gathered, like, there's a few weeks where I ask people for their favorite boundary statements. And then one of the things we do is we make databases of some of the resources we have, but then we make them publicly available. But I'm really bad at, like, letting people know that exists. But we have a boundary, like, we have a boundary script database. So I'll link to that in the show notes. And because there's one card specifically that's about communicating around low capacity. And I really liked some of the scripts people had around like, you know, I'd like to be like, you matter to me, but I'm low capacity or just, I don't have capacity to take that on right now. And so just even seeing how other people are wording boundaries, I know that's so massively helpful for my brain.
Yeah, me too.
So let's start building our wellness city.
Sure.
To juxtapose our burnout hell city, or not our wellness, our burnout recovery city. So our burnout recovery city, Some of the things that would be there. So strategic withdrawal. So I imagine like little pods that people can go to that are just like sensory havens. For me, that would be like having like a beanbag chair or like the moon pod. It would have weighted blankets. It'd be really dark, but there'd be some like some twinkle lights. Like there'd be some fun lights in the mix in this little like isolated, like strategic withdrawal pods is what they'd be called. And it's totally temperature regulated. Like you go in and you decide the temperature you want. It's like a little like nest, like you're like in an egg nest, your like recovery place. And you get to choose the scent if you want like nothing, or you can choose a scent and you like program it into the wall and it like comes out. And what else would be in this little nest?
I would want to have some sort of screen so I can watch my special interest movies or shows on repeat, uninterrupted. I would probably want some animal companions in there. You know, maybe you have a choice of those. Also you could have like weighted stuffed animals and things like that as well. But can I just have bears running around?
Wait, what kind of bears?
Capybaras, those big rats that are super popular now.
Oh yeah, Patrick has a new special interest. I don't think we've announced this to the world. Exciting thing when a new special interest enters our ecosystem.
My algorithm is so full of capybaras and like, there's like a rotation of animals in my algorithm at all times, but capybaras is taking up a lot of space right now. It's their time to shine.
I love that you have a special interest that's not work related.
Yeah, I've been trying to figure out ways to like, man, can I go volunteer at an animal sanctuary? Or like, how can I spend more time around nature and animals in general? Because it truly does bring me a lot of joy. So definitely trying to figure out how to access more of that.
I think this is part of the season that I'm like manifesting for you. I don't even really believe in manifesting, but this like going underground season, it has to have like sanctuary farms and animals are favorite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of those things in my calendar over the next 2 months. So I am very excited about that.
That's where you should go write this book. Is that an animal sanctuary?
Yeah, I might do that. You know, I talked about going to that farm during COVID with Hazel during the grief episode and how she immediately rolled in animal shit on the first moment we got there. That was not the type of sanctuary or relaxation I need. So I need the opposite of that. I need like...
You need the thing you sent me a picture of. Is that in Scotland?
Oh yeah, those Highland cows. Yeah, for sure. Those are also one of my like favorite animals. And anytime I get a new like favorite animal, I'm like, where can I get that tattooed on my body? So do not be surprised. Next time we see each other, I have like a capybara tattoo. Yeah. It's definitely on my mind.
Your body's going to run out of space.
I know. I agree. But until that time, plenty of these opportunities that come up. So yeah, this would be in our burnout prevention city. These pods would be really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Strategic withdrawal pods.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'd be, I feel like I've mentioned this before, either here or in my community, this idea of like if we all had like a necklace, or like maybe it's built in. This is like very futuristic. Maybe it's like built into our bodies. That sounds creepy. But like where it's signaled. So it's like green light, I'm open to talk, or like I want to talk to new people. Yeah. Yellow is like I'm open for like a meaningful engagement. Sure. And red light is like, don't look at me, don't talk to me.
Yeah.
So it's like our boundaries are visible to people as we walk around in the city.
I do like that idea. My friend Xander, who you've met before, is making he's one of his special interests right now is making like these, I don't know the word, I don't think it's monogrammed, but designing all these like leather like tags / like name tag type of things for like sensory preferences, quiet time needed, no hugs, like all the things. And yeah, so he's bringing a bunch of those to my Scotland summit and I'm excited for those.
Wait, I like remember I sent that like wall.
Yeah, you had sent that from the...
Yeah, and I was like, because he was making really cool tags for like luggage. And I was like, you should do this because it was from the like a Fluffy conference.
Yeah, I need to send you the picture of all the ones that he has right now.
Like, I'm so excited that he's making those. That's so cool.
Most of the things that he put on there, but like a lot of stuff that's sensory related. And some funny stuff too, like in my opinion, but yeah.
I use that once for we do like a weekly conversation prompt in the Nook. And so I posted that and I had people say like what tags they would make. Mm-hmm. There were so many funny responses. I loved it. I was like, I would just love to be at a space where people just, had these tags that were signals of there were some funny ones. I wish I could pull them up, but that just communicate sensory or communication needs.
Maybe instead of these things being embedded in our bodies, maybe people in this burnout prevention city are just wearing these types of tags and,
And it's like part of our fashion. And so it's kind of fun. And it's like, oh, what tags do I want to wear today? Mm-hmm. And it's like an accessory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Depending on your mood, depending on your level of burnout, like you might switch it up.
So you don't want us to combine with the robots yet for our city?
I feel like we're not far off from that. But yeah, let's keep that.
Yeah.
Like maybe that will happen to most of us in about 5 years-ish, 10 years.
So when I first had that idea, it was before AI was here, and it was a cooler idea because it was very obviously futuristic. But yeah, now that AI is here, like that idea just sounds creepy. Yeah. There'd be like explicit boundaries mm-hmm. where it's just like visible on our bodies through decor. We'd have these strategic pods. Oh, accommodations. The accommodation center would be like very useful. And it'd be like, what accommodations do you need? And there'd be like the waiting area for the accommodation area would be very sensory friendly and soft textures. And
could the accommodation center just be more like a vending machine and you just walk up to it and just press the button so you don't actually have to communicate with anyone?
You're brilliant. That's what it would be.
Yeah. Well, just go in and it's like touch screen and you just tap on what accommodations you need for the day.
Or it'd be like Jan from The Good Place, the mm-hmm. robot who like you just say, Jan, is that her name? Janet. You say Janet and she comes and then you say what you need and she gives it to you. So Janet would be our accommodations.
I like that.
Because she can like pull anything out of her mouth. And it's just, there you go.
So yeah, this...
go ahead.
I don't know where I was going. Megan, Anna, and I are so excited to have a repeat sponsor who's supporting the Divergent Conversations podcast. Landmark College is the world's first accredited college designed exclusively for students who learn differently. Landmark, located in Putney, Vermont, which is one of my favorite states, offers courses in person and online, awarding associate and bachelor's degrees, and offering pre-college, gap year, and professional development programs for educators who work with neurodivergent students. With a student-to-faculty ratio of just 7-1, and the renowned Landmark College Institute for Research and Training, Landmark offers personalized and research-informed support for neurodivergent students that is not available at traditional colleges. Still enrolling for fall 2025. Learn more about this opportunity at landmark.edu. That's landmark.edu. There's a light in my office right now that is like flashing. There must be like a loose fuse in it, and it looks like The Shining or something. Like the light is just flashing like this, and it is really bothering me. But I don't know if you can. Yeah, you can kind of see it.
Oh, I can see it. I can see it. Yeah. Do you want, we're literally talking about like reducing sensory irritants
as part of
burnout. Is there anything?
Legit look like a horror film. My God. Okay, we're back.
So, but that's a great example of there was a sensory irritant in your environment. And it'd be really, I imagine it'd be kind of tempting to like power through. You're like, I'm not going to disrupt the flow of our recording. Take care of that need.
Yep. Yeah. So I think stuff like that, you know, modeling that on a consistent basis is really useful. And I think that, yeah, in the past, I probably would have just sat there and looked at it on my peripheral, like, what the hell is happening?
And that goes back to the depth work then, because it's, I know for me, not causing a scene like that has been so ingrained in me, both because of my evangelical upbringing and you just don't cause a scene and being a girl, but also not wanting to stand out because always being afraid of standing out for misses.
Right.
And so that goes back to be able to do things like reduce sensory irritants. We often have to do that deeper work of what does it mean to stand up and interrupt a workflow of a conversation to take care of my needs and to take my needs seriously.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Super important. And it does come with a lot of work. That's for sure. I work through a lot of my own internalized ableism, people pleasing, all the things, and just feeling more and more confident that you are allowed to ask for what you need and, you know, set those boundaries and
I just had a thought as you said that. I wish in this workbook, I wish I would have talked more about attachment. And if I had more space, I would.
Yeah.
Because people pleasing and internalized ableism, but also I think a lot of us probably have to varying degrees some level of attachment trauma. Sometimes it's big T trauma, sometimes small T trauma, where to gain a sense of connection to others, I think for many of us, we perhaps, you know, deprioritize our needs or have a lot of patterns around that. So I actually think working through our attachment issues is a big piece of recovering from burnout.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well said.
So yeah, those would be some of the like faucet ideas, or just like thinking through kind of doing a 360 of where can I reduce demands and sensory irritants and just the things that are required, like, you know, filling me up with stress. And that's, again, that's where privilege comes in. If some of us can do that when you're parenting, that's where it gets really tricky, because a lot of us are parenting autistic children.
Right.
And we're autistic, and it gets a lot trickier to out, like, to turn down the faucet, because our faucets are just on all the time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And then the flip side would be like, okay, what are the things that is going to like increase capacity? So increase durability of the container. So that's when we start talking about things like nervous system. So like, are there things we can do that make the nervous system have more capacity? And that could be through learning about the nervous system, through doing some really intentional nervous system practices that help us regulate it. It could be attachment work. I mean, attachment work impacts the nervous system. It can be getting to know our sensory profile, because sensory dysregulation dysregulates our nervous system. It can be paying attention to the narratives we hold in our heads, because the narratives we tell ourselves will either activate fight flight or communicate safety. So it's when we talk about nervous system regulation, like that tree branches into so many things. But that would be a really pragmatic way of thinking through increasing capacity. Things like addressing mental health or medical conditions that are in the mix, because obviously those are going to be things that drain our capacity. Setting up energy management systems, so like pacing systems, is something that's talked about a lot, both in the chronic health community, but also in the neurodivergent community. So that's where we're kind of intentionally tracking how much energy something takes, and then intentionally like creating rests and breaks between, so that we aren't just doing that like boom or bust thing, but we're like actually pacing it. And that can be helpful, again, when we don't have those internal signals. It can be helpful to be intentional around pacing. Things like prioritizing sleep, your favorite thing to talk about.
Yep. Lack thereof, for sure.
But also, like, this isn't just about like managing hard stuff. It's also about connecting with autistic community and autistic joy and special interests and leaning into autistic strengths. Those are things that increase our capacity. Right. So it's also the flip side of this is also leaning into things that bring us joy and pleasure and connection and community. And so those are some of the things that I talk about in when I think about like expanding capacity.
Yeah. And on the flip side of like the withdrawal that I was talking about, because I so often do crave connection simultaneously, even while needing withdrawal, that makes me much more intentional about who I am going to spend time with when my energy is really low. And a lot of the time it's going to be my autistic friend groups for the most part, in where we already have established like framework where people know my sensory preferences and I don't have to over explain them or ask for those accommodations with a lot of guilt or remorse. And it's also a privileged place to be in a lot of ways too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. Cause I mean, masking would be a demand. And so it makes sense that when in burnout, you'd prioritize, because connections can be energizing if they're the right kind. So prioritizing the connections in our restorative, not depleting. Yeah. I just had this interesting experience because we're setting up like essentially like a UK branch of Neurodivergent Insights. And I've got a business partner who's from the UK. And I just got back from that. And we worked together in person quite a bit over the week. And first of all, I've never worked in person since starting Neurodivergent Insights. It's all been virtual. But I realized it was also the first time like being in close proximity to an autistic person in like a work environment. Like there was the retreat, but it was different. Like we all had our own like places. And it was so interesting just to notice. First of all, it was just weird to be like, this is the first time I'm like spending extended time with another autistic adult. That was like a weird realization. But then the ease of which we went in and out of like work or even the way we would eat food, it was just natural for us to eat staring ahead and not at each other. Like, why would you stare at each other while you're eating? That's just weird. Right. And it was so interesting to experience just the ease of like moving through interactions and work. It was really such an interesting experience.
I love that for you. Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And it makes a huge difference. Yeah, why do eating staring at each other? I'm just thinking about that. Like, what are we doing? Oh, you know what would be in the city? I just thought about there would be a hotel called Monotropic Manor, and you would just go there. And you can just go into monotropic focus and on whatever you want. And you have like little nooks where you just get to sit and do that. And you wouldn't have to talk to anybody whatsoever. You just walk right in and your little nook is already established and created. And yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love that. And then in the other city, it'd be monotropic split. Mm-hmm. It'd be the same building, but it's like you go in and all of a sudden you're faced with like 10 tasks you have to do. And they all feel urgent. Yep. And they're pulling you in.
Oh, I just had like a whole reaction to that. Yeah. And depending on like where you were at in your burnout recovery journey, like you either walk up the stairs or down the stairs, or you end up upstairs or downstairs, whichever it was, through the elevator. And you would not get to choose. You would just show up to the level you're supposed to be at.
I don't know. I want to hang out in Monotropic Manor. That is something that when I am in burnout, that is one of the first things I'll do is I'll prioritize monotropic work.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just like give it to myself and be like, I'm just not going to look at inbox or notifications.
Yeah.
And that's so important.
Well, circling back to us like talking about writing these books and potentially doing some writing together somewhere. And you were like, I can do this for 14 hours a day. And I was like, I mean, good for you. And I think I can make it to like 3. And I'll be like, I got to go do something.
And I'll be curious if I actually can do that for a whole month. So when I went to California to write the burnout, the first half of the burnout workbook. I do think I was doing 14-hour days, but it's only a week. I think part of it for me also being a parent is if I'm going to leave my kids, like, it's like there's so much, and especially because then I'm asking Luke to take on extra labor. It's like it's a combination of like, I've got to pack a lot into these days to justify me being away from my kids.
Right.
But then it's also, I really can go into the writing vortex and time just stops for me.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So do you get the vortex at all when you write?
Yeah. I mean, when I first wrote this like really rough draft manuscript, so to speak, back in August, I mean, I did that all in like 7 hours. I wrote 60,000 words in 7 hours.
Wait, what?
Yeah. I mean,
see, I can't do that. I can't do that. That's wild.
I mean, I hope to never do that again. That was
Wait, 60,000 words in 7 hours?
Yep.
I can't, I'm trying to do the math on that. That doesn't seem right.
It was 9 hours, 9 hours, because I watched all three Lord of the Rings movies on repeat. So I was just like, Lord of the Rings was on in the background. I was just like typing furiously. Then it would end and I'd look up and then start the new one, start back up. And then at the end, I was like, I can't feel my arms anymore. Like they were in so much pain.
Wait, that'd be like 6,000 words an hour.
Yep. I wrote the whole first draft in that night. And I've never experienced that before in my life. Like, so I hope that it never comes over me again in a situation where I am actively like putting my body and my brain through that.
Yeah, that doesn't sound pleasant. My vortex is much more pleasant than your vortex.
It was pleasant at first, but then like I did completely lose track of like everything around me. And I don't even remember like looking up at all. So
yeah,
do that again.
So I was writing a book, and this was before I was in the neurodivergent space. It was an academic book, but I was writing a book when my kids were younger, and I'd wake up at 4, and I loved it. I'd turn on the fire. We had like a fluffy rug, and I'd sit on the floor and I'd write, and I would do a lot of vortexing. And this was before we knew about autism. And the kids would be like asking for something and I just would not hear it. And Luke would get kind of frustrated because be like, oh my gosh, kids are asking for something. So you're just ignoring them.
Sure.
But that is the thing about the vortex is the world. Have I shared this on the podcast before? I had my puppy peed on me and I didn't notice.
No.
When I was in the vortex. So, I mean, there was a blanket, but like I was in the vortex, I was writing and I get up. And there's just like a puddle of pee on the blanket. And I realize that Shadow has peed on the blanket at some point during me vortexing. I don't remember it or was not aware of the fact. And my pants were a little damp.
Well, I mean, so yeah, this vortex would be a part of this recovery city. And sometimes I think it would be when you were in the throes of burnout, and sometimes it would be when you were coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It would just depend. And sometimes versions of that, your dog would pee on you.
I think maybe that's the tagline of monotropic. What's it called? Monotropic
manor.
Hotel? Manor. Monotropic manor, where dogs pee on you if you don't notice.
Where dogs pee on you and you don't mind.
Oh, I like how you're sticking with the alliteration.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. So we have diverged per usual. I know we have like a little bit more we want to cover in this, I think. And I have like another 10-ish minutes that I can go. So what else do we got?
I guess like other things would be, so as much as it is about like managing your energy, it's also about like finding the things that give you energy. So like, and I feel like we're already talking about that. So things like monotropic focus, or like you've talked about animals, or the right kinds of social connection.
Yeah.
So, and then that can get back to insight work of, we might not actually know what gives us energy. Again, if we've deprioritized our needs and prioritized the needs of those around us, then that might actually take some experimentation to sort out like what feels good, what's pleasurable, what does feel replenishing to me.
Right. Yeah. And I think that can be a big struggle when we're talking about like sense of self, right? And the acknowledgement mm-hmm. of self, and especially if you've been masking for the majority of your life, and all of a sudden you're asked these questions, like, what are the things that light you up or give you energy? And you're like, I have no idea. Because I've said that many times. Like, I couldn't tell you. And mm-hmm. that can be a big mental hurdle too. Mm-hmm. Try to unpack all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you were to just ask me that point blank, I'd be like, I don't know. That feels so vague. There's this, my brain does this where it like anchors on an idea based on another idea, and I don't actually have to share the idea it comes from, but my brain just needs to share it all. This is the context thing. There's a thing that comes from like child parenting psychology, which I can't remember who says this, but it's like, catch your child doing good. Because a lot of parents will default to correcting children. And right. So to catch your child doing good and to name it is like a standard parenting practice. So I went to catch your body doing good, or like catch the energy when it's mm-hmm. there. And like, right. I couldn't list, these are the things that give me energy, but I can catch it. So right. I think I want to practice that. I mean, I do have a sense because I have caught some of those, but I want to practice that as we're recording this, like catching the things that support my energy. Like I know for me, going out and sitting in the sun is one. Right. I know when we're recording, I often feel more energy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because we're often deeply connected.
Yep.
When I'm in my community, there's often some friction to like log in because it's notifications. But then when I'm in it, I often feel energy. But yeah, it's almost like I have to catch it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to list it.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I've asked point blank and I'm like, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Nothing. My default response would be like, nothing gives me energy, which would be untrue. But like, that is definitely what my brain would immediately default to. And that would be like, I would just have a very hard time naming that. But I do think a lot of the stuff that we talked about on the wellness series, you know, are things that give me energy in a lot of ways, like traveling, experiences, connection and community. Like a lot of the things that we talked about are definitely the things that I try to tap into when I can. And mm-hmm. I've also like acknowledged that will not always be there. Like that's not accessible to me at all times. And I think that's what used to frustrate me pre-discovery. I was like, where is this going? Like, why do I not have access to it? Where am I? Why can't I find the joy or the energy from any of the things that I typically enjoy or spend time doing? And it was before I had the understanding of any of the stuff that we're talking about right now, but it would be deeply frustrating to me. Like, how come I can't find it? And then I would just label myself as like deeply, darkly depressed all the time.
Like why, when you say it, why can't I find it? Like, why can't I find like that spark, that joy?
Yeah.
I
just assume I was just in major depression, like all, mm-hmm. you know, almost all of the time, and had no concept of autistic burnout or autism mm-hmm. in general.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I really relate to that. Both from a burnout, but also for me, the sensory stuff is just so huge.
Yeah.
For me, it was often because I didn't know I was sensory shut down. So I'd often be like, why can't I enjoy my life?
Yeah.
And it would be because I was literally like my nervous system was in shutdown.
Yeah.
And that is such a like mind. Like, it's just a clusterfuck when it's like, I am not enjoying my life, but on paper, I should be able to. And so whether it's because I can't find that spark that gives me life or meaning or purpose or energy or presence, like it's the being able to be authentically engaged piece. And if we are burned out or if we're sensory overloaded, we can't be authentically engaged with our lives. And then like, if we can't be authentically engaged in our lives, that's not going to feel very meaningful or joyful or any good. No.
And everybody around you, right? For the most part, friends, family, partners, potential therapists, they're like, just reframe, just do this, just do this. Mm-hmm. Like, look at how good this is. Positive psychology, ABC, CBT, reframe this. And like, I think that for me, those were some of the most irritatingly frustrating experiences I had was just not only everyone else's lack of understanding, but my own lack of understanding and just kind of getting caught in that all the time.
Well, because, yeah, then it's like, well, what's wrong with me? People are saying I should be able to reframe out of this and I can't. Yeah. So it reinforces the shame and the isolation. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And you can't reframe your nervous system is the thing. And I'm thinking back to, this was in Belize, like there was a workshop on nervous system stuff and like polyvagal theory, and someone brought up, so one of the limits of polyvagal theory is they often talk about like kind of what other theories would call the like window of tolerance as social. And someone asked a really good question, which was like, you know, isn't that kind of biased toward neurotypical people? Like, and what Yunetta, who we keep referencing Yunetta on this podcast, what she said is like, maybe that, what'd you say?
I said, as we should.
As we should. She said, maybe that like when we're in that optimal kind of window of tolerance, maybe that's authentic engagement. Mm-hmm. And I loved that phrase so much, that for us to be in our nervous system in a place that feels good, right? Not freeze, not fight flight, is for us to be authentically engaged. And that could be with a creative project. It could be with ourselves. It could be with others. And I think what you're describing, I think what I'm describing is like when we're not in that authentic engagement window of our nervous system, like we're not going to be happy. We're going to be stressed. We're going to be discontent. We're going to be restless. But we often don't have language for that. And you can't reframe your nervous system in that sense of like, yeah.
Yeah.
So authentic engagement, I would put that as part of like, if I was making a new list of burnout recovery, finding ways to be authentically engaged with yourself, with the world around you, with others. And that's going to look different for everyone.
Yeah.
It could be monitor but focus on a special interest. It could be being in nature. It could be being with animals. It could be being with other autistic people, eating, looking straight ahead, not at each other.
Yes, all of those things. And I think that will change too, right? Like that, what you need in those moments might change because you might go to access something that used to work for you and maybe that feels out of reach at the moment. But in reality, like there's all of these other options too that sometimes I don't think about in terms of like, okay, how can I be authentically engaged with myself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I really like that. Thanks, Yunetta.
Yeah. Especially because I think so many of us are prone to dissociate and burnout of like, I'm going to withdraw. I'm going to like numb out to TB. And it's, and we need some of that. But then I think we also need authentic engagement.
Without a doubt, 100%.
Yeah. You're getting wiggly, which means I think it's close to your stop time.
We're over it, so.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you do the social ligament thing and close us out?
Okay. Okay. I actually
okay, Mom.
Yeah. So anyway, if you like us and you want to find more of us, no.
If you want to authentically engage with us,
go like, download, subscribe, and share on Fridays. But yeah, episode 2 of whatever we're going to call this series, which I'm sure we'll figure out at some point in time.
I think it should be like Burnout City.
I do too. I actually thought episode 1 should be like Burnout City hashtag or dot, dot, dot. Whatever that tagline was about sensory hell. And I don't remember what it was, but we will figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, Burnout City. Burnout City. And then what are we calling the other city? That's Burnout Recovery City.
Burnout Recovery City.
Mm.
But I liked Monotropic.
Monotropic Manor.
Monotropic Manor.
If your dogs pee on you and you don't mind.
No, you don't notice. Oh, yeah, you don't mind. Keep them. Yeah. We're getting more playful with our podcast, which I'm enjoying.
I think we've kind of rediscovered what works for us, you know, and we've kind of stated like the batching is working better for us and less interviews also because of just the toll that takes energetically. I think it works really good. I mean, you mentioned last episode, like, I don't remember the last time I've seen your face. And I was like, I think it was like 6 weeks ago. And maybe it was even more than that because we recorded 8 episodes. So maybe, but anyway, yeah, it's working good. So I'm feeling
it's because of authentic engagement, like the batching plus the not doing interviews. I think I feel more authentically engaged with myself and with you.
Yeah, agreed. 100%. I don't remember what I was saying, and it doesn't matter.
If folks were authentically engaging with wanted to like download
and all the things,
subscribe.
Yeah, do all of those things, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Dr. Neff here. This season, we are clearly talking about autistic burnout, a topic that Neurodivergent Insights has covered extensively. So if you would like more resources to supplement your learning, we've put together a page where we've curated all of our autistic burnout resources, free and paid resources. We have lots of articles on autistic burnout. We have an upcoming free email course that's going to be released soon. We have workbooks on autistic burnout. So if you'd like to check out our resources, again, both free and paid, you can go to neurodivergentinsights.com/burnout-resources. It's linked below and in the show notes. I hope you don't need these resources, but if you do, they are there for you.